I am Farron Peterson, joined today by Caitlin Morgan. She is the Racing and Nominations Assistant at Jonabell Farm for Darley America. Caitlin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Boundless Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Farron Peterson, a professional jockey and veterinarian in Lexington, Kentucky. We are here to learn from stories of resilience, risk-taking, and perseverance.
I'm happy to introduce our first episode of Boundless Students. Our aim is to inspire students and young people in the numerous career paths the thoroughbred industry provides. You will see what happens when you walk through open doors and create your own future. Special thank you to Joe Moore with Silo Skyline Farms, Dr. Rachel Jones, and Dr. Keith Stafford for helping to sponsor the student episode.
What do you think of students coming to work for you and how they work their way up?
Well, we love getting students in whenever we can, and fortunately enough, we have a few that have come from the equine program in UK.
Can you tell me, give our audience a general idea of what you do in your job?
Sure. So my role is kind of split and between the two departments. So on the racing side of things, I do all things administrative for the racing, as far as our horses in training, their movements, what trainer they're with, if there's some in the clinic, if some are, at a different racetrack for a race, everything to do with that, keeping up with vaccinations as well, and any type of vet work that has to go. HISA has become a huge part of my job, so I manage all of the HISA for our horses as well.
So that's their vaccine records and veterinary work, and just
exactly
as they move around the country to race, people know what they've
exactly
had work done. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. And just, to make sure they're cleared to race. They're, they're okay. They can work on the racetrack and they're completely fine. So HISA has been really great in that way, just to help us honestly keep track of everything. It's all on one system. So the trainer can enter a vaccination, and then if that horse turns up at the farm a couple weeks later, we know that it was vaccinated for something. So just managing all of that is kind of a huge part of my job, and it sounds maybe silly, like it doesn't sound like it would take a bunch of time, but we have over 200 horses in training, so it's quite a lot to keep track of at any time. So
a lot of moving parts.
Exactly. With the racing as well is kind of where my supervision of the aftercare for our Godolphin horses, we call it Godolphin rehoming here, and Godolphin lifetime care. So that would fall under the racing as well. So as race horses retire from the racetrack, which we rehome all geldings, they will come back to the farm and they'll be part of our rehoming program. So from there, they're pretty much given 30 to 60 days just out in the field to be horses, and then we can look at getting them a new home thereafter.
To our audience, why is it harder to rehome a gelding?
I would say, I don't find too many problems. It's not too hard.
Or I guess the importance of finding rehoming versus a mare or an intact colt came off the racetrack.
So I think you're going in the direction of it's difficult in that people definitely seek out mares, especially in the thoroughbred industry, because you can breed them and, produce more race horses. And then a colt, obviously, can become a stallion. So the geldings are kind of that little group that people are just kind of done with. When, if they're not good racehorses, it's like, okay, second career for them.
Which it is so neat. I work with a few different of the, new vocations and Anna Ford, and I just love being able to give back in a little way to that next career.
Absolutely.
It means a lot to come to Darley America and see where the racehorses get to live in nicer stables than my bedroom I've ever lived in. Big turnouts. And then for horses who didn't get to that elite level in their career, to see all the uses. I grew up with just, I never had an off the track thoroughbred, but my horse was my best friend. He was a gelding. So I loved having a gelding. And did you grow up with horses?
I didn't grow up with horses at my house, unfortunately. I wish, but I did grow up riding. So I pretty much lived at the barn from the age of 8 until probably 18 while I was at home. Mm-hmm. I had to work to ride. So that was kind of the deal. I had to go and show up and work, and then I would get lessons out of it.
Nice.
So it worked out well for me, and I feel like I learned a lot doing it that way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to learn the groundwork with horses.
Absolutely.
Go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although we just want to jump on their back and ride as long as possible. I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my horse in my backyard either. So yeah. Always had to get my parents to drive me out to him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My parents, they would pick me up from school and drop me off at the barn, and then they would pick me up on their way home from work later.
Uh-huh.
So it worked out perfect, I guess.
Yeah.
We found a barn that was close enough.
Uh-huh. Gave you enough time to work and ride.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So your parents were not involved in horse racing?
Not at all. And my parents are very supportive, and they try very hard to understand the thoroughbred industry, but they still to this day are just not involved.
Uh-huh.
It is a very, very foreign concept to them. It is a whole nother world.
Uh-huh.
And I will probably be explaining to them what I do for a living for the rest of my life. So
at least they want to know. I would say
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah.
My parents have surprisingly picked up on it. I've been a jockey for about 7 years.
Wow.
And my mom was a rider, so she loves watching my races and me telling her the different personalities of the horses I ride.
Mm-hmm.
We ride a lot of different horses, but then there are some that you ride over and over, and so she'll develop her favorites and we'll talk about them. And then my dad, he's more into sports, and he was my high school coach, so he likes the sports side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So they both watch it, all my races, so that's been
that's
really
awesome.
Neat to have their support. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of different in this industry to not have family involved and find your way.
Mm-hmm.
Was that intimidating for you?
It was definitely intimidating. I would say not at first, because I was so in my own little world riding my horses growing up and just kind of paving the way. But when I moved to Kentucky, I was a junior in college when I moved to Kentucky to go to the University of Kentucky. I really got into the thoroughbred industry at that point. And again, kind of just being like a pretty like naive person going into it, I wasn't very intimidated. I was just like, I'm going to get a job, you know, foaling mares this season at this thoroughbred farm. And pretty soon realized that a lot of people have family in it. And, you know, a lot of people are introduced as this is so-and-so's son, or this is their dad is so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't have that. I'm not
right.
from here. You would not know my parents
at right.
all, like
no.
at all. Little small town, you know, parents. It became intimidating.
Yeah.
I went into it probably not as intimidated as I was even still. I mean, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And you've worked your way up. So you started with the broodmares.
I did.
And foals.
Mm-hmm.
I love foaling.
Yep.
There's nothing like seeing a young thoroughbred
mm-hmm.
and watching them stand up for the first time and bob their head. And
it's the best.
Yeah.
The little whinny that the mare makes like right after she foals to her baby is like, it sounds so cheesy, but it really is like the
mm-hmm.
greatest thing in the world. It never, ever gets old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That connection to just
mm-hmm.
see them. And some of the mares I'd find too would be sort of mean, some of them. And then as they got closer to foaling
mm-hmm.
and the hormones would change, all of a sudden they'd just become very sweet. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And some that you would be like, you are never going to be a mother. And then all of a sudden they're like, all their maternal instincts come out and you're like, oh, wow.
This worked
out. This is really nice to see.
Uh-huh. It is.
At Rancho San Miguel, tradition meets breakthrough science. In a recent observational study, we witnessed the power of electroequoscope therapy. An 8-month-old colt, once barely weight-bearing, returned to trotting after just 5 sessions. A 20-year-old stallion with declining fertility and facing retirement showed a measurable increase in healthy sperm motility, extending his breeding career. Electroequoscope is a non-invasive, intelligent microcurrent therapy that scans for inflammation and cellular imbalance, then delivers targeted currents to restore function. It's medication-free, pain-free, and promotes deep healing at the cellular level. In another study, 100% of mares receiving 12 protocols showed improvement in soundness, mobility, and overall wellness. As Tom Clark, owner of Rancho San Miguel, shares,
the results are remarkable. We look forward to working with Equoscope Performance in the future to improve the lives of so many horses.
This June, Rancho San Miguel will begin a larger quantitative study, and they are proud to offer Equiscope services to their herd and welcome rehabilitation cases. Breakthroughs are happening, and your horse could be next. Follow us and contact our team today to learn more or schedule a consultation.
And you were saying that you transferred to the University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You went to community college before that?
I did, yep. So I went to a community college. It was about 20 minutes from my house back in Maryland. And I was there for 2 years, and I worked through that time as well. And I think that was just, it was a great decision for me. I do not regret that at all. Just staying at home for a couple of years after high school, and I got to work and kind of just save up some money. And obviously community college doesn't cost nearly as much as a university does. So it was a great decision, I think.
I did the same thing. I wanted to bring my horse to college, and my parents said, yeah, you're crazy. Where he lived growing up was at my grandparents, so it was free. And so I decided, okay, I'll go to community college. And I was waitressing, so I just worked in restaurants, saved up my money. And at that time, I ended up going to vet school, but I wasn't planning on it. So then to realize that would have been 8 years of tuition rather than six, because like you're saying, it's very affordable going through community college. And the level of education to me was totally up to par. I feel like smaller class sizes were really good to get better teaching. So I always try to tell young students or people choosing college that I highly recommend community college and transferring.
Absolutely.
Plus, do you really know what you want to do when you're getting out of high school?
I definitely did not. So it was really beneficial for me.
Yeah. It's nice to bring down that college debt.
Yeah, absolutely.
More freedom to go pursue something like this where, yeah, we're not born into it. We're not really sure how to work our way up, but it gives you that freedom of just having a little less debt on your shoulder.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So then how did you end up connecting with Darlie? Godolphin.
So I guess as soon as I moved here, I was serving for a little bit just to make some money around my class schedule. And then I had a farm that I worked at just for the breeding season. It was kind of like an internship program, but it was perfect. But it was just for the breeding season. So I knew, you know, in June I kind of needed to start looking for somewhere else. And I just happened to be driving my friend to work here on Bowman Mill, just up the road to Mill Ridge, and would just drive past Jonabelle every day. And I was like, gosh, that place is just so beautiful. And this sounds so silly, and I don't know if anybody here will ever listen to this, but I really did not know anything about Godolphin. Like, had no idea. Like, I really was not submerged in the thoroughbred industry at that point at all. So to me, it really meant nothing. I was just like, that looks like a nice place.
That's good. Less intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I just looked it up at that point, found a contact email or phone number. I can't really remember if I called or if I emailed, but I finally got in touch with the human resources manager and just sent her an email, kind of sent my resume and said I would love to, you know, get a position here if possible, if there were any openings. And they actually emailed me back right away and said they had an opening out in Paris, Kentucky, at our yearling division. So I started in Paris with our yearlings. I was there for about a year, which was great. The manager out there is awesome and really helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And from there, I was with the mares and foals for a couple of years. And then I I loved the mares and foals. So that was that was tough for me to kind of leave that because I do. Like, I'm definitely still a horse person at heart. We all are, you know, we're here still, even though I'm in the office now. But I just loved being hands-on with them. And like you were saying about the personalities, like, it was so fun to find, you know, figure out their different personalities. And then you could start kind of attributing some traits and things to different sires, or, you know, each foal out of this mare is a little bit quirky, or, you know, so it was just kind of fun to put all that together. And then you go to the broodmare farm and you meet the broodmares and you're like, oh my gosh, it all makes sense. So, yeah, I loved that.
I found that if I ride siblings of racehorses, And that's really fun to put that together. And sometimes they say they can be really different. Mm-hmm. Some of the greatest racehorses, their siblings, like, don't live up to them at all. Mm-hmm. The ones I've been on usually are pretty similar, I've found, which really is really cool. Fun.
A note about siblings. So I have, with my rehoming little job, I also get to look at all of our rehomers first, which is not always the greatest thing because I want to take all of them home. So I adopted a horse from us last year. We actually competed in the RRP this year, and my boyfriend ended up buying his little sister. Uh-huh. So we do have siblings, and they are identical. Literally in every single way. So it is very cool to see like the siblings that are, and that was one of our biggest drives. Like my gelding is, he's just has the best personality. He has the best temperament. So when this filly came through the sale, we were like, if she's anything like this gelding, like we have to have her.
Yeah.
And fortunately it worked out and they are exactly the same. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And can you talk about the RRP, what it stands for and what it's about?
Yeah, so the RRP is the Retired Racehorse Project, and it is really, it's supposed to be basically the first step in a second career for these horses. So they really want to emphasize at the Retired Racehorse Project that this is not like the end goal for these off-the-track thoroughbreds. To qualify for the RRP, this horse has to have had a registered work or race in the past 2 years before the competition, and they cannot have had more than 10 rides after the track before December 1st of the year before. Mm-hmm. So for horses, for example, to qualify for RRP 2025, they would have had to raced or worked in the past 2 years, and then they cannot have been ridden more than 10 times before December 1st of this year. Mm-hmm. So it gives you, I think in a way they're trying to control to show just how quickly these thoroughbreds can adapt to a new career. But it's also, it's really cool to see exactly how fast they adapt. And then this is just kind of a stepping stone in their second career. So it's really cool to get them all together there. And you can tell, you know, they're babies. They're green. They're off the track. But they've come a really long way. So it's cool to see how bright the future is at an event like that for these really, really fresh off the track thoroughbreds.
I'm not surprised to hear how adaptable they are. Mm-hmm. I've never retrained an off the track thoroughbred. But when I think about the life cycle, and that's why I think it's important in any role we have in racing to have worked in multiple roles and seen all the exposure they have as foals, how much they're handled, you know, being on trailers and going to sales and how they're handled there, and then coming to the racetrack and then moving to different racetracks, whether for training, for races, shipping around. And I just think it's so good for their mind. To be exposed to all these things. And we see equestrians talking about bomb proofing and having to get out pool noodles and walk them over little homemade bridges. And it's like our racehorses have been through it all.
They've had a goat in the stall. They've had the tractors running around outside. So they have. Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll certainly be green and need to learn something new. But it's kind of like us. We can learn something new if, you know, we're willing to have that open mind and try. It's always intimidating to start, but you just have to start.
Absolutely.
So now in your position, what are your current goals?
My current goals, I really would love to, speaking of the rehoming, I would like to grow the rehoming a bit more. That is what I am most passionate about, is just the aftercare of the thoroughbreds. I love every aspect of my job, but that is definitely where my heart lies. So I do want to grow that, and I want to make it more of a trend, really, to for the entire company and for the entire industry to support and follow along these horses in their second careers. So I'm excited, you know, to figure out a way to do that. I'm still fairly new in this position, in this specific position, but I'm excited to brainstorm that with the team and see how big we can make it.
Yeah. I love it that you have a vision for it. And of course, Godolphin, Darley, they're interchangeable, basically, the breeding side and the racing side.
Yeah.
But just a very elite racing organization overall. Mm-hmm.
What are some things you can tell us about Caitlin since she started working here?
Since Caitlin worked here, Caitlin is one of these superstar young people that have come into the game. She was a student at UK, and during holidays and weekends, she came to Stonerside and started out there and with Mares and Foals, and then progressed through that. And she worked at our rehab stable, not all the time, but she helped out in there as well. And some of the horses that rehabbed here on the farm as well. And we really put her hand to anything that we asked her to do. And even when she wanted to try and do a little bit more work in the office as well, at a moment's notice, if you asked her that she had to fill in a spot for someone that was off in one of the barns, she was jumping out there and wouldn't let you down any time to want to do that.
The Thoroughbred Industry Employee Awards is a globally sponsored program by Godolphin to reward and recognize Thoroughbred Industry staff. It is celebrating its 10th year in the U.S. and has awarded over $1 million in prize money to over 250 individuals. Nominations are now open and close on July 14th. The ceremony will be in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday, October 21st. There are 7 categories in which people can be nominated. Anyone can nominate. Please visit the website TIEA.org to nominate. Call the Godolphin office with any questions on the process. Candidates do not have to be U.S. citizens. They just have to be working in the U.S. legally. Please send in your nominations. There is a category for everyone.
They're in how many countries?
We are in 5 different countries. Yep. It is the biggest operation in the world, which is very impressive. And it's just top class in every single country. So it's really cool to see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's neat to see the way that they treat their employees and their horses. We were feeding carrots here with Jimmy, the stallion manager. And, you know, you can just tell that everyone has respect for each other's colleagues and also... I think that always trickles down. You have respect for people, you have respect for animals.
Absolutely. It is truly just one big blue team. Like, it really is. And that is my favorite part about this company, is everyone is a team. It does not matter your position or who you are, how old you are, how long you've been here. Like, everyone is a part of the team and everyone has the same goal, and that is the horses, and to have, you know, to give them the best care possible. And that definitely does track. I mean, the number of compliments that we would get on just the behavior of our horses, and like, you can just tell that they're happy. They love people, and they just never have had a bad day in their life with, you know, with Godolphin. They really haven't. They just are happy, fun loving little guys out there. So, and that helps a lot, you know, for them to, they just don't have a worry, and they want to please you, and they have a good experience.
Yeah. And the blue team, explain that. This is reference to, I know, your guys' racing silks.
Yep. So the royal blue is the quintessential Godolphin color. So it's kind of, I know we also are in Kentucky, where University of Kentucky is also very similar royal blue. But we also kind of refer to ourselves as just Go Big Blue. And that's kind of our little... team little motto, and it works. It's nice.
So do you feel like being on this team then gives you the potential opportunity to travel to some of those other countries?
Absolutely. Yep. So I did travel to Australia the first half of this year. So I was there until about June, and that was great. I had never really worked out of the country before, so I got to experience that. And as different as it was still the same team, you know, it was still just the same supportive group of people who are just happy to be here. And you would definitely, it's really, really great. This company does kind of encourage people to travel if you want to, like if you want to go meet the team in England that we all email every really? Single day, you know, like uh-huh. you're welcome to. And it's nice to make those interpersonal relationships as well, because, you know, there are people, like I said, in England that you would email every day because they're a huge part of our marketing and everything. But I couldn't tell you what they looked like. So
yeah.
it's nice to actually be able to put a face to those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes sense what you're saying about the organization feeling the same, even mm-hmm. in another country. I believe when an organization has an obvious, you know, standard call to action, mm-hmm. just directive, that then it would be implemented everywhere.
Yeah.
And even a simple example is Trader Joe's. I feel like I've lived in so many states around the country now, and Trader mm-hmm. Joe's always has happy employees.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's like, okay, it starts from the top. Mm-hmm. You treat your workers well and respect them mm-hmm. and, you know, and I think it's so great that you started with the lower level work, because mm-hmm. then we can appreciate the grooms, the people who are spending those dark hours waiting for a mare to foal.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And I will never forget it when I'm sitting in here and it's 5 degrees outside. I'm like, oh my gosh. Uh-huh. So, you know, and it does. It gives you a greater appreciation for that. And, you know, on those days, I might be more inclined to go buy them a hot chocolate or a hot coffee, because you get it. You've mm-hmm. been there. You were out there chiseling the water tank. Like,
yeah.
I totally get it. So,
yeah. yeah. I wouldn't have wanted to skip any of those steps in my formative years.
No, me either. I think it's been so important. And I would say for me, like, that is definitely one of my proudest traits, is that I was a horse person first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for me, that was really important. And that's what I love. And that's what made me love this sport so much. And mm-hmm. I think that really... You know, I think that I put a lot more into my work now being in the office, because I know, like, I love it. You know, I just yeah. know what it's all for. And I was in the barns, and it just made me love it even more. So
I agree. You have to love horses. There has to be some passion, because, yeah, it's hard work. It's long hours. And when you're starting out, the temperatures, like you said, are not mm-hmm. always ideal. But if you have passion in front of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
You just rock on. Yeah.
And it's kind of neat to look back and think, oh, I did that. And
exactly.
it helps you with the next hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I could tough that out.
Exactly.
This can't be so bad.
Exactly. And I really tried to explore kind of all the different departments as well. So I think I mentioned I was in the yearlings and then the mares and foals. And then I kind of started to express interest at the sales, actually. So Godolphin will consign mares in November and January at Keeneland. So I was exposed to the, you know, the administrative side with some of the ladies that were out at the sales, and just kind of expressed interest in wanting to learn more about what they do in the office and what's, because mm-hmm. I really had no idea, like, I had never pulled up the horse management system or any of that. So really tried to get out there and just, you know, kind of trying to find a time with them to come in here and just see what they did in a day. And I worked with our resident trainer out at Keeneland as well, Johnny Burke. Mm-hmm. And I will still say that he has taught me the most out of pretty much anyone. He is so brilliant, and I had never worked on the racetrack before, and mm-hmm. obviously he is he's our rehabilitation trainer, so he's not training to race these horses. He mm-hmm. is rehabilitating them from whether it was just immaturity or they needed a surgery or whatnot. So that was a really cool experience for me as well, that I took a lot of pride in, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I loved mm-hmm. working on the racetrack with him.
I've heard Johnny Burke is a legend.
He is
a
legend.
I see him out there, but I have not been able to learn under him.
He is a legend. If you ever get a moment to talk to him, like, he's so brilliant, and he has the funniest stories, and uh-huh. and he's just amazing. Like, some of the things that he will bring up or talk about, you're like, what? Like, oh my gosh.
I'm sure,
like,
he's seen a lot.
He's seen a lot. Uh-huh. Yeah. We always say he's our secret weapon here. Like, uh-huh. he really is.
Yeah.
A lot of those horses out in that stallion barn have gone through Johnny Burke, and mm-hmm.
brought them back healthy to their races.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. probably better.
Yeah. Like you know, professional mm-hmm. athletes, they need to have that sports therapy
they do.
Team behind them. Like when we're pushing Absolutely. Our bodies that hard, yeah, we're going to have injuries.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think young people can get intimidated to ask older people for help. You know, it's easy to look and think they're going to be too busy. They're not going to be interested in helping me. Mm-hmm. What have you found with reaching out for help?
I have found that it is not that hard and is not that intimidating. I would have been that person that said to you, oh, they probably don't want to help, or I'm just bothering them, or it's an inconvenience to them to have to, you know, worry about me for a day or whatever. But once I actually built up the courage to ask, I realized that that is truly not the case. And people in this industry specifically want young people in this industry. So they want to do everything they possibly can to teach you about everything about their career and then try to help you to steer you in the right direction to see what you want to do as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember early on, like during my bachelor's, reaching out to different veterinarians and emailing them, and vets are very busy, so mm-hmm. often they wouldn't email me back the first time, mm-hmm. or different internships, and it would take me several tries, mm-hmm. and luckily I have that persistent spirit naturally mm-hmm. in me, but I would kind of think, like, are they going to find me annoying, you know, when I finally go to meet them, did they think I was over the top? So I try to tell people, of course, like, give them some time to answer your email, but right. then follow-up emails are very important because, yeah, when we're working, I'm sure you go through a lot of emails a day. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're emailing internationally.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily mean people don't want to help. And often I've found if they're not able to help you, they'll direct you with the next person who is.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is definitely. And I'd say, I mean, that I definitely was not necessarily rejected by, but I never heard a response from many, you know, like you mentioned, I replied to a few vet clinics or asked if I could come shadow, and a couple other farms. And you know, that I think that's going to happen. And like you said, maybe the email got lost or whatever happened, but you'll find the person that really shapes, you know, the way that you, were looking for. And, there are people that want to help. And like you said, if they don't necessarily have the time to, they will definitely steer you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. So you're 25 now. You graduated from UK what year?
2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've only been out 2 years. And what mm-hmm. was your major?
Equine science.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can use a college degree in the racing industry.
You can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My college experience, at least at University of Kentucky, was a little bit different just with COVID. So I think I was there for a semester before the campus shut down.
Uh-huh.
So then I pretty much, even once campus opened back up, you still had the option. As we all know, the world was still a little funny. You still had the option to not go to class. Mm-hmm. And at that point I had started working for Godolphin full time and would just do my classes, in the evenings. So that kind of changed my, you know, college career a little bit, I would mm-hmm. say. COVID definitely changed it a little, but it worked out. It worked out okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I graduated with a veterinary degree and now I'm a jockey, and I've had mm-hmm. older people question what I'm doing with my degree, and I say I'm using it every day
mm-hmm.
because it's horsemanship. It's, you know, mm-hmm. understanding animals. And I am doing relief work as well, but still my primary job and my primary goal is as a jockey. So I just tell people, you go to college, you get a great foundation. I think it teaches you work ethic,
mm-hmm.
Organization, and then certainly skills. And then you go out into the world and you find your passion.
Absolutely. And the University of Kentucky was also great because of the networking that you get to achieve there. You meet so many people. And as we all know, the thoroughbred industry is very small.
Mm-hmm.
And you meet so many people. And I met all of those people, you know, in college because I moved here not knowing anybody. And not knowing what I wanted to do. So I would, you know, I would say that the college really helped me with that as well, just to really start to meet some people and talk to people and kind of just start to figure out what the thoroughbred industry had to offer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Which it's pretty amazing how much it has to offer. It's a lot of variety. And your position they sort of created, correct?
They did. Yes.
For you?
Yes. Uh-huh. So it's kind of a funny little in-between position, I guess you would say. It did not exist before. I was just the assistant to the racing manager, mm-hmm. Which I loved. But that was not really a real position either. That was kind of, like I mentioned to you at the sale, I was like, can I come like see what you do? And that kind of turned into this internship that then turned into like the racing assistant. And then it got to the point where it was like, okay, we need to give you a real job, like mm-hmm. no more of this like little internship because you've been, you know, mm-hmm. so that's kind of where this racing, and nominations assistant came from, is this is my real job. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a great thing to be able to, mm-hmm. as younger people, just go out with the skills and the ambition that we have and mm-hmm. learn from there. And I say currently I ride horses by day and practice emergency medicine at night. And it's like, yeah, if you want to learn and fill your time and when you have, you know, less obligations when you're younger, to take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what advice would you give to someone young in their career?
I know everyone says to work hard, but genuinely work hard. And, You have to put yourself out there. You really do. Especially if you come from a family that is really not involved in the industry that you're trying to go into. Just get yourself out there and talk to as many people as you possibly can, because I think you would be surprised how many little connections there are with so many different people. They might know someone in some industry that you are really interested in, and then you can get connected with them as well.
I like that point that you have to put yourself out there, mm-hmm. because most companies and in our industry, they're underemployed and wanting people. And mm-hmm. so I think people take that as, well, it should take me one try to reach out, because if they really needed me, mm-hmm. then, you know, they'd snatch me right up. And I've had friends in this industry who are in, like, they're the ones doing the interviews and going through that, and they go, but you have no idea how hard it is to go through that process and to find people. And once they have applied, and then, you know, if you're understaffed, then you're probably working on several other projects at the same time. Mm-hmm. So not to just think, okay, I have my degree. Someone's going to ring my phone one day and offer me a job. Right. And don't just stop at the first place you tried. And if that's really the place you want to end up, keep going back.
Right.
Keep knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I hope a lot of young people especially will listen to our discussion today, and just neither of us were born into it. You know, we both have found our way. We have big ambitions, and yeah. It's neat to be in an industry where it's just endless opportunities.
Absolutely.
You never know mm-hmm. how your life will be changed by a horse, by the people in this industry. Like, it brings together some really amazing people and just a great family.
It does. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Caitlin, we originally recorded this episode back in the fall, and a lot has happened since then. Godolphin won the Kentucky Oaks with Good Cheer and the Kentucky Derby with Sovereignty. Did you have any connection with those horses early on?
So I actually, funny enough, and very fortunately, was on the farm Stoner side where Good Cheer was born. So I was hands-on with her really from day one. I have the cutest little photo of her as a foal. She's like literally right out of the womb, like the cutest little squish. But she's always, like, she just always was such a little showstopper, like very straightforward, very easygoing. So
showed a lot of class.
She had a lot of class. So very, very lucky to have known her early on. And then Sovereignty, I actually did not have any connection to. I do very vividly remember the first time I saw him, though. So one of my jobs is to go and take photos of all the yearlings to upload to our system. And it helps just when they go to pre-trainers and they go to trainers. It's just a little bit of identification for everyone. Make sure you have the right horse, I guess.
Right.
And so I remember the first time I saw him, and I, as a yearling, and I was like, this is a nice horse. So I remember coming back to the office and my boss, Michael Vanahan, he kind of was just like, okay, who are the standouts? And I think I like threw out there like two random yearlings that I probably liked because they had some story behind them or something, not really knowing, physical, not looking at the same things that Michael is all the time, probably.
Yeah, giving a different perspective.
Exactly. But he was like, he mentioned, he said, what about the crowned yearling? And I was like, yeah, like that one was pretty nice. So it was just funny, like from the get-go, again, like Good Cheer and Sovereignty both, they stood out for sure. They were not like the diamond in the rough. They were really nice.
Yeah,
Yes.
athletes for sure.
Definitely.
And what was your experience like being with Team Blue and being in the winner's circle for both the Oaks and the Derby?
It's really indescribable. I feel like for, almost, I mean, a month now, I guess it is the 4th of June. For a month now, just trying to find the words. It's nearly impossible. It's an overwhelming feeling of joy. And when, you're just so proud of the horse. Like that really, at the end of the day, you're just so proud of the horses and so proud to be a very small part of them.
Right.
But it's just incredible. And going into it, you're just really hoping for a safe trip for them. And to even have a horse entered in both the Oaks and the Derby was a miracle in itself. And we had two in the Derby as well, which is even more like it's unbelievable. And then to have them win both of them was just remarkable. And I remember we were in the director's room when we won the Kentucky Oaks, and it was said to us like, don't get used to this, like this is hard to do, like. And sure enough, everyone's like, the horses are making a liar out of us because here we are back. So it was a very special day. And of course, just special to spend it with the team and, all of the people who have been more hands-on with those horses than anyone else. And it's very cool to see. That's my favorite part. Like, aside from being so proud of the horse, you're watching the groom that puts in all the hours to be, with Sovereignty every single day, just to see their emotions. And the broodmare manager who foaled him, like that is what really is so special.
I agree. I love that part of watching a horse win a race and thinking of the whole team that goes behind that. And like you said, how hard it is just to qualify to even be in the starting gate for the Kentucky Oaks or the Kentucky Derby, and you can only get there in your 3-year-old year. And there are just so many hurdles to even be able to participate, which I love your approach and attitude towards that, and just to be grateful for that. And then to see that outcome and see like how much it means, even when you just have such a small part. I felt that way, even if I've just breezed a horse once and it wins, just to have touched that horse, been around it, know the groom who takes care of them day in and day out. It's so meaningful.
It absolutely is. And I think that's what's so cool about them too, is they do make everyone feel special. Like you said, I might have been with, I was never with Sovereignty, but just like I saw him a couple of days before, you feel connected to them, even if you really haven't touched them at all. So it's cool.
Right. And the reason we're on Zoom today is you're in Saratoga because the Belmont Stakes is this weekend and Sovereignty is second choice at 2-1. What is that atmosphere like being there with the team?
It's pretty quiet at the moment, to be honest. So I am here a little bit earlier, but it is already, I mean, it's kind of, it feels like the calm before the storm. So, but it's a great, there's a great buzz in the atmosphere. Of course, we were at the barn this morning. Sovereignty went out very early, so we didn't get to see him. But it's just such a good feeling. And you see the trainer and you see the jockey and everyone's just they're so excited. And we asked the assistant trainer which stall he was in, and he was like, oh, just go find the chains. They have to have it like chained off. We were
Keep
like,
the
right,
fans away.
okay. Yeah, we're like, all righty, like we'll go find the chains then.
He is.
And Good Cheer, of course, she's not in in the Belmont, but she is here for the grade one Acorn. So we went and saw her as well. And it's so good. You know, everyone just kind of looks at each other and silently is thinking that they just look incredible and they're doing so well. So
awesome. That's exciting to hear. Sovereignty is my pick for the Belmont. So I'll be rooting you guys on.
Yay. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Great. Well, I'll be looking for you on TV.
Good.
And now for a moment from our next episode with Sandy Morris, airing June 19th, 2025.
I know you have a great story of vaulting in the Olympics after a pretty major injury.
Both of my Olympic experiences have injury involved. One of them ended in a medal in 2016.
Sandy Morris. She is here on a mission.
The next one ended in me breaking a pole and not making it to the final in Tokyo.
This is not the kind of time you want to pick up an injury, and that's really unfortunate.
I did land in the pit, but the place that the pole broke was directly underneath where my bottom hand was gripping, so just the sheer force of the pole snapping a fiberglass stick threw my arm down, my wrist fractured, and then also the bottom half of the pole jumped up when it broke. It jumped up out of the box and hit me on my back really hard. And so it's like I fractured my wrist, but getting smacked in the back with a breaking fiberglass stick, you know, I don't know how many pounds of force were going into that thing when it broke. But I think that's the most painful thing I have ever felt before, was getting whipped on the back with that. But so this happens. I land in the pit still, fortunately, like rotating, landed on kind of on my head, but in the pit. And, you know, the first thing I'm feeling is my back is just stinging from getting whapped. And then I'm like, oh, my wrist hurts too.
Boundless is a podcast that explores the stories of individuals who have accomplished the seemingly impossible by breaking molds and redefining success through unique challenges, pivotal moments, and unbreakable determination. This episode of Boundless is brought to you by Amwager, where horse racing fans can be part of the action anytime, anywhere. Watch, wager, and enjoy races from tracks across the country on a fast, secure platform built for racing enthusiasts. Whether you're following your favorite horses or jockeys or discovering new tracks, Amwager makes it easy to stay connected to the sport you love. Getting started is simple. Sign up today at amwager.com and enjoy a 100% deposit match. Terms apply. See amwager.com for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, help is available. Please call 1-800-GAMBLER.